KZU, Pacific Grove, Monterey Bay Public Radio.
America is waiting for a message of some sort or another.
Good evening. My name is Mae Brussel. The title of this broadcast is World Watchers. Before I begin, I want to say the views expressed here are those of myself and do not necessarily reflect the views of KZU staff or board of directors. This hour, World Watchers, is made possible in part by Aries Arts in the heart of Capitola Village, serving Santa Cruz's growing consciousness for over 20 years. Well, now we begin the first broadcast of World Watchers. It's program number 839, January the 4th, 1988, the first broadcast of this year. And I believe with the pile of articles that I have to share with you that this is going to be one humdinger of a year. Nothing could match last year, but this is going to be pretty close. And I think a lot of interesting things are going to come out during the period of Christmas excitement and New Year's going on from Thanksgiving on through. It seems sometimes there's a lull in the news because the major media wants to get you in a happy mood, have you shopping, and they play the trivia programs over and over. But if you take as many papers as I do and collect them and try to catalog them, there is anything but trivia going on. And so we start off the year with a bang, and I mean a big bang, and we may as well get into it. The first item I want to mention is an article in the San Jose Mercury, several articles about George Bush regarding the arms for Iran. The San Jose Mercury had a story which many of you, most of you, saw reprinted everywhere that he supported the Iran deal, the arms to Iran, despite misgivings. He had misgivings about it, but he supported it. And Vice President George Bush acknowledged when a document was shown that existed with his approval, February the 1st, 1986, of arms to Iran. George Bush acknowledged that he solidly supported Reagan's secret weapons sale to Iran from the outset, even though both of them had misgivings about it. They weren't sure it was right, but for the very outset, and of course the question is here, when was the outset? This article in the San Jose Mercury said that Bush said he continues to strongly support what the president was doing, even though in hindsight it was clearly an arms for hostage deal. And that brings up the question, arms for hostages, how far back, when was the deal? Now, this morning's Chronicle, January the 4th, 1988, has a story, Iran-Contra Spotlight is turning to George Bush. And in there, George Bush, this article concludes, I'll give you the conclusion before we get to the beginning, that he has refused to discuss his role in the Iran-Contra affair, saying that any conversation with Reagan should remain private. If the price for my winning the election is that I have to go out and violate the confidence, I'm not going to pay that price. Translated, that means I'll give up the nomination and the presidency if you keep nudging me about the arms to Iran. Now, the article from the New York Times and the Chronicle today said the special prosecutor in the Iran-Contra affair is expected to submit questions to Vice President George Bush about his role in the sale of U.S. weapons to Iran and is considering an interview with George Bush. Lawrence Walsh believes that Bush must answer several questions about his participation in the arms sale and the advice he may have given the president before the weapons were transferred to Iran in 1985 and 86. Now, does that mean before carrying 1980 to 81? How early before does Mr. Walsh, although the investigation covers 85 and 86, he wants him to answer questions. Walsh has submitted written questions to Ronald Reagan. Bush's role in the affair has come under intensified scrutiny in recent weeks and is seen as potentially damaging to his campaign for the Republican nomination. Last month, the congressional investigators released that newly discovered document from February 86, Now the special prosecutor, while he says there's no indication that they're considering charges against George Bush, they want to ask him questions, and they want to ask them seriously. Now, I don't know how many of you have C-SPAN, but this past weekend, over the New Year's weekend, they played a news conference three different times, the same news conference. And in that conference, three callers, one from Salinas and two from other parts of the country, referred to the research that Barbara Honegger has put together and the documentation, which indicates that George Bush sat in an early Paris meeting where arrangements were made to hold the hostages until Ronald Reagan and George Bush himself won an election. He had a personal reason for helping Khomeini or suggesting or paying off with weapons that they hold up the hostages so that he and Reagan could be elected, because it was the lack of getting the hostages out that surely defeated Jimmy Carter. He would have won if the hostages had been home. And they came home after Bush and Reagan were inaugurated. So the question about the arms deals being sent to Iran is going to be on the news. Brian Lamb from C-SPAN got three calls and said that he would call Barbara Honegger, that he would have her on the program. And since that time, she has a lot of documentation from Paris, from Bonnie Sartor, the former president of Iran, who knows which weapons were sold and how much was sold and when, and how early the administration was sending the weapons preceding 1985 and 86, which the original committee was only supposed to look into these 2 years, the Iran-Contra Committee. But that's separate from the George Bush nomination. His offices are very heavily linked to the narcotics traffic, Mr. Gomez-Rodriguez, and this international web of narcotics. And he also is linked down as CIA director to activities that took place in Chile that I'm going to be talking about this evening at great length and for the next few weeks. I don't know how long Bush can be immune from all of this, but he may have an out if it gets too heavy by saying, I won't reveal what I said to the president. And he said, if it takes that, I won't run for the president. Now, I want to update a few bombshells that are taking place in Europe, stories that are happening regarding the Vatican Bank. I've done so many broadcasts on the Vatican Bank and the shooting of the Pope, John Paul II, in May of 81. And there's some items I want to update and share with you. I don't want them to slip by. The first is an article from the San Francisco Chronicle, January the 2nd, 1988, titled, The Man Linked to the 1981 Attack on the Pope is Found Dead. A man associated with the attempt on the Pope was found in a jail in eastern Turkey. His head was found, his body, in a prison toilet on Wednesday. Mr. Asian, A-S-I-A-N, his name is Samet Aslan, rather, A-S-L-A-M. Mr. Aslan was suspected of being a member of the Grey Wolves, a rightist terrorist organization. The Grey Wolves are the German Nazi youth, the Hitler youth that Aja was with in Germany, in Frankfurt, Germany. It was a right-wing plot to attempt assassination on the Pope, to blame the Bulgarians and the KGB, and now one of the right-wing people that Aja worked with has been murdered. And these were the fascist elements. One more witness, Henry Arsan, was killed in jail, and a whole group of people that I've mentioned from time to time. But this latest one, Samet Aslan, was killed this past week, this past week, as a member of the Grey Wolves. He belonged to the right-wing terrorist organization. He was being held in prison, tried for various offenses in Turkey in 1978, including murder and the possession of explosives. He was on an international list because of his alleged links to Mehmet Ali Aja, the right-wing terrorist who's now in jail in Italy for shooting the Pope. And this article finally acknowledges the right-wing terrorist. Observers speculated that Mr. Aslan was silenced because he was just about to give details of the assassination attempt on the Pope that would shed light on his sentence when his trial would end. Details of why the assassination was carried out are still not known, as if the preceding paragraph didn't tell you all you need to know. And he was never tried for his involvement in shooting the Pope and working with Aja. He returned to Italy on the promise, Turkey, on the promise that there'd be amnesty for various exiles if they return and their prosecutions would be light. And as soon as he gets to Turkey, he ends up with his head in the toilet. Another story, New York Times, December the 11th, 1987. Italy presses the case against the Vatican Bank officials. Archbishop Paul Marcinkus, Luigi Manini, and Pellegrino de Strobel, all from the Vatican Bank, running the money in the Vatican, have not gotten off the hook by the Italian government. For a while, it looked like Mr. Marcinkus and the others would have amnesty. The New York Times said the Italian magistrates investigating the Vatican bank scandal remain determined to prosecute an American archbishop, despite a past court ruling in July that said he was beyond their jurisdiction. They want to reopen the case against Marcinkus and the other Vatican bankers. They filed a constitutional challenge in the constitutional court. Whether they can try Marcinkus and the others or not, their names will come up in these trials and for the records to show their involvement in the collapse of the Banco Ambrosiano that they were involved with, one of Italy's largest banks. It was a $1 billion collapse, and the Milan-based bank had close ties to the Roman Catholic Church. And, of course, these were the top officials of the P2 and Licio Gelli. The article says, according to judicial officers close to the case, the magistrates are determined to present evidence of wrongdoing by the Vatican officials at their trial, even if the Constitutional Court turns them down. They're going to bring up the role of the Vatican in the collapse of the bank and the Vatican bankers. Another story out of the Washington Post just a week ago, December 23rd, Swiss court jails Italian financier. And all of these articles I'm citing relate to South America and other stories I'm going to update for you later. Fugitive Italian financier Licio Gelli was sentenced to 2 months in prison. And after his 2 months in Geneva, he's to be sent immediately for extradition to Italy, where he's wanted for the murder of 85 people, no less. And, of course, he's head of death squads, and he was a part of the Waffen-SS and the Italian secret police and set up the P2 to plant a military dictatorship in Italy and other countries around the world. But he's been charged with planning the Bologna bombing, which, again, was blamed on the leftists, like the Red Brigades was blamed on the leftists. And all these prominent Italian figures and bankers are now coming to court over there in trials. And a witness to Ajaz's trial, a right-wing fascist from Germany, is dead. Licio Gelli will be taken to Italy and tried. Gelli attended the first inauguration of Ronald Reagan and was close to Michael Adeen, the Iran-Contra people. He escaped the Swiss jail in 1983. He's back there now, and they're going to send him to Italy. That will be very interesting. And then from a journal that is sent to booksellers and publishers called the ABA Newswire, September 28, 1987, there's a lawsuit, and the article says, controversial former Vatican banker sues to block a novel. Penguin Press is coming out with a novel using the name Paul Marcinkus as a character over and over again, and about his plot to try to assassinate the late Soviet leader, Yuri Andropov. And Marcinkus is trying to stop this novel. Probably it's too close to home, and goodness knows what that's about. Or maybe we should look into Andropov's death again, being as John Paul I was murdered in the Vatican, and these teams are very good at eliminating their own and other people for particular purposes. Another story in the New York Times, December the 20th, 1987, court upholds the acquittal in the plot on the Pope. And this has to do with three Turks and three Bulgarians who were cleared of complicity in trying to shoot John Paul II in 1981. There was a lot of suggestion that the case was still open, that Ali Aja had testified in court that the case involved Bulgarians and the KGB. Of course, he was coaxed by Francesco Pazienza and the Italian mafia sitting in the cells next to him. But according to this report, it took 6 years of investigation for the state. They couldn't find a shred of evidence to back up what Aja said or what anybody else said, that this was not a matter of the Bulgarians and the Turks or the Bulgarians equal KGB. And so at the same time that a witness to Aja's connections to the Nazi organizations is drowned in a toilet, the courts in Italy are clearing all the leftist group of any complicity, even though the trial had acquitted them. Now I'm going into a complicated subject, a tangled web. I'll try to go slowly. For those of you that get KFJC to hear David Emery and Nip Tuck, they have covered some of this material, not all of it, not all the connections. And this web is a part and parcel of pieces that I've been putting together for the last years, as they have been doing. The tangled web, if I describe it, has to do with Nazis, the likes of Otto Skorzeny and Gerhard Mertens, the Odessa Network, the G. Gordon Liddy Nazi American Odessa Network of Otto von Bolschwing, the Central Intelligence Agency, George Bush when he was CIA director, assassinations in the USA, particularly Orlando Letelier and Ronnie Moffitt again, mind control and missing children. And missing children is what I want to dwell on this year, the links of missing children to the Church of Satan and the Heinrich Himmler Castle rituals of Michael Aquino, and how many missing children are happening. This has to do with missing children from Germany being sent down to South America. And the series that I'll be doing for the next few weeks has to do with torture, with private armies, and the inevitable links to Ronald Reagan and his secret team in the White House, the Stanford Technology Trading Group, and Oliver North, and General Secord, and Thomas Kleins, and William Casey, and particularly Admiral Poindexter, and Frank Turple, and many of the elements that I've talked about for many years. Different parts of those elements seem to be coming together more clearly every single week. So sometimes we have to reevaluate, take new material, and reevaluate it with the old, and put the pieces together, putting that new piece of the puzzle in. What instigated me getting into this subject right now was a long article in the Washington Post by Bradley Graham titled "German Settlement Stirs Controversy in Chile. The court blocks the efforts by the Bonn government to investigate allegations of forced labor sexual abuse. Now, this has to do with Colonia Dignidad. 8 years ago, April 1979, April the 20th, April 27th, and May the 4th of 1979, I did three broadcasts on Colonia Dignidad in Chile, comparing it to Jonestown, the money coming from West Germany, and the implications of Colonia Dignidad connecting to Operation Condor in South America, these death squads that go all over the world to put police states in. And when Eugene Hasenfuss landed in Nicaragua, in 1986, one of the first words he mentioned was he was part of the Condor. And the Condor is Colonia Dignidad. It'll take a few weeks, two or three or four, to separate some of these pieces. I don't want them too confusing for you. But the interesting part about Colonia Dignidad right now is that I have updated the broadcast I've done. It's 1979, those three, on this area, sporadically, just filling in little pieces from time to time, and a few big pieces as it came into the news. But what's instigating the German government, they have paid $80,000 a month plus to Colonia Dignidad. What has instigated their concern now is the missing children in Germany. Now, we're talking about missing children in the United States, children abused at nursery centers, at military-based nursery centers around the world. Germany is having a problem of missing children, and they have reason to believe they were sent to Colonia Dignidad, the place of torture, slave labor, child abuse, sexual abuse, you name it, and a haven for Nazis since the formal Colonia was set up in 1961. But people like Joseph Mengele have been there and Martin Bormann, and a haven for Nazis as they regained their muscles in the early 60s, just I think the peak period of change of government was when John Kennedy was killed in 1963. Colonia was formed actually in 1961, but Bormann was down there, and as I said several weeks ago, he was involved in plans as far as New Orleans and Texas in the murder of John Kennedy. So this article came out about a German settlement in Chile and the missing children. This is December 25th, 1987, and I'll get into it in a minute. Now, one of the major funders for Colonial Dignidad is a man named Gerhard Mertens, a co-partner of the notorious Otto Skorzeny, one of the people released by Fritz Kramer and Senator Joe McCarthy when he was in the Senate. Kramer, the German Kramer, was a defendant there, who became our plans officer at the Pentagon. But Joe McCarthy had to release the Malmedy defendants, and Skorzeny walked away from the jail, and Skorzeny worked with Gerhard Mertens, who put up a big hunk of funds for Colonia Dignidad. And his company is called, or was called, I don't know if he passed away just recently, I have to check that out again. The company for his arms deals is called Merex, M-E-R-E-X. As I say, David Emery and Nip Tuck have done broadcasts on Mertens and the links of Otto Skorzeny to Merex. And now I want to bring it to Oliver North in the National Security Council. This is one of the articles that Dave and Nip had on the air, but I haven't shared with you yet. It's an earlier article about the Iran-Contra in March of 87 from the Los Angeles Times titled "The CIA's Purchase of Smuggled Arms from North's Aides Probed by Panel." And what the panel was investigating, and of course it's all very hush-hush, they dropped it like a hot potato, was the fact that Thomas Kleins and Albert Hakim and Richard Secord were given priority with a weapons dealer, the company called Merex Corporation, the same name as Mertens. And these same people work and worked with and do work with Pinochet down in Chile. Colonia Dignidad is located in Chile. And as soon as Salvador Allende was murdered and Pinochet was made the president, he immediately used Colonia for the place of the, in quotes, missing people from Chile who were then burned alive, cut up alive, attacked on their genitals by dogs in Colonia Dignidad. This isn't a happy story, but none of these people are very nice people. So I'm going to giving a little background of where I'm going, because this makes a big ball of wax to a lot of people that I've connected through the years. I just want to cite a few things about this article about the CIA weapons and their links to Merex Corporation in Savannah, Georgia, and then the links of Mr. Atwood, Colonel James P. Atwood, who's in charge of those weapons, who works with Frank Turple and Edwin Wilson. And, of course, Wilson, through Task Force 157, helped overthrow Chile and made Pinochet the head of Chile. The article says independent counsel Lawrence Walsh and a Senate committee are investigating the CIA purchase of $1.2 million in smuggled weapons from Oliver North's two top aides on the Iran-Contra affairs. What the question, the two offices are questioning whether the CIA made this unusual purchase, and they call it unusual purchase, last September as a financial reward for former Air Force Major General Richard Secord. Now, what does Secord need a reward for as of March of 86? He's diverting 85, really, the committee, it's 86 rather, March 86, when he's sending these weapons. Reward for what? He was very heavily paid with a lot of profit money. So far, there's $7 million in their account. But they made an unusual purchase with members of the CIA. He said, hardly ever happens. For Secord and Hakim. Now you have to go back to put this whole ball of wax together to Secord and Hakim's company, Stanford Technology Training Group, which bought International Imaging, that corporation set up by Waffen-SS Otto von Bolschwing, a member of the Gestapo. He came to the United States, and his translator, when he was in California, lived in California, died here, came over here in the late 50s, was Helene von Damm, part of that corporation, TCI, with the subsidiary, International Imaging. She was Reagan's secretary for 8 years in California, for 6 years in Washington, and then became our ambassador to Vienna. And these are the people it was so important to make this deal with. There weren't evidently places that weapons could be purchased, although the CIA said they have other outlets, that this was very unusual. The article said the investigators are seeking to learn whether North or his White House boss, National Security Advisor Poindexter, steered the CIA to the arms deals. Now, why would you steer the CIA to a company that ends up with Merrick's? The CIA doesn't have to be steered to arms deals. Officials reportedly believe that the little-noticed weapons sale, and you bet it's little-noticed, it hasn't hardly been in any news articles since this came out in March, the little-noticed weapons sales could yield new evidence of the financial and personal ties of the CIA, North, and an army of private operatives in the Iran-Contra scandal. And it also, I might interject here, could conceivably bring in new ties linking it to the controversial Colonia Dignidad. Now, remember Michael Aquino of the Church of Set, who learned his Satan religion in Vietnam, was part of the Delta Force, and Ollie North, one of the activists of the Delta Force, both of them probably and very possibly overlinking in their experiences in Vietnam, because as Michael Aquino goes on with the Joint Chiefs of Staff and some members of NATO to do the ritual services in Himmler's castle, the Waffen-SS in Westphalia in Germany, links of these people to this other network becomes closer all of the time, so it isn't far away from Aquino to North to Stanford Technology Training Group to arms dealers with a company called Merex, and a Mr. Mertens owned Merex and was funding Colonia Dignidad and close to Colonia Dignidad. The article said last September, White House computer records showed that John Poindexter, this is Admiral Poindexter of Navy Intelligence, ordered Oliver North, to pressure CIA Director William Casey to make sure things were right for Secord, apparently awarding Secord the contract to sell or transport arms. And the big question here, of course, has to be, why would Admiral Poindexter use a Colonel North to pressure an old man like Casey, who's been in this thing since before North was born, practically in with the OSS and thick with all the machinations of where the weapons flow and go, Admiral Poindexter from Navy Intelligence. Now, it was out of Navy Intelligence that Edwin Wilson worked in Washington with Henry Kissinger and CIA Director George Bush when Task Force 157 was overthrowing the government of Allende and putting in Pinochet. And Navy Intelligence was the cover for all of that. And here we have the Admiral using some kind of pressure, giving an order to Oliver North. Couldn't Poindexter, the Admiral, call Casey himself and say, give it to Secord? He used North to pressure Secord, which is really weird because Secord was under question over the EATSCO scandal and a lot of other matters, that involvement of huge sums of money that were put into their private till. But why would Poindexter pressure North at North? Why did he need the middleman? The article said a month later, after North, evidently, on orders of Poindexter, pressured Casey, a month later, the Danish freighter, chartered by Secord and Hakim, unloaded rifles and cash of Polish weapons and ammunition at the Pentagon's munitions depot in Sunny Point, North Carolina. The arms cargo was reported to the U.S. Customs Service. CIA officials privately admitted that the agency, the CIA agency, purchased the weapons, but contend the CIA had done nothing wrong. An internal CIA inquiry concluded that the agency was unaware it was buying Polish and Portuguese arms from Secord and Hakim. Another knowledgeable agent said that the explanation was implausible, that one-time CIA purchases of smuggled arms almost never occur because the agency has well-established secret channels for buying and selling foreign weapons. And the article goes on to say that the FBI agents interviewed various people in Denmark about these shipments in Copenhagen and went to interview Hakim and Thomas Kleins. And Thomas Kleins is one of the key names here because of his role down in Chile when Salvador Allende was murdered, and working out from Saigon to Chile and working with Task Force 157 and Edwin Wilson. This Thomas Kleins was down in Chile, and the story was that they were under pressure to buy from them. They bought, and they interviewed Kleins, a North associate who made trips to the Portugal arms factory last year at the behest of North and Secord. So from Saigon to Chile, and then with the Ronald Reagan shenanigans in the National Security Council, they again put the money with a Swiss bank, with Willard Zucker, the old partner Robert Vesco, who also is the partner of Carlos Letter Rivas, now on trial now, an alleged pro-Nazi, a lover of Hitler and Mussolini. And these people have close affinity to the Third Reich and the continuing legends that they carry in their heads or rituals wherever they go. The article says that the CIA's contention that they were unawares and led into a multi-million dollar weapons deal with Secord and Hakim really seems strange. They shook their heads at it, and the agency contends that the two unnamed middlemen approached them last summer with the offer, and then they went ahead and bought the arms. And then the arms, getting to one more point, I'll probably have to continue this article after the break here. It's the end of the first half hour. I'll continue with that. We'll take a 1-minute break now because that's the custom here.